This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello there. I appreciate you listening today. I'm Joel Hilliker. We are living through historic times right now. 20 years ago, on May 5th of 2001, our editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury, gave an address where he talked about how the world was entering a time more serious and dangerous than any it had experienced before. He quoted 1 John 2 and verse 18, which says that it is the last hour before Jesus Christ's second coming. He said, when the last hour strikes, well, then we're into it. And the other side of that last hour is going to be when Jesus Christ returns to this earth. So we're obviously getting very close to the return of Jesus Christ. You need to keep track of time, he said. God is giving us, I think, a timepiece so we can keep track of time and motivate ourselves and never forget we are in the last hour. Now, God inhabits eternity. 1,000 years are to him as a day, it says in Scripture. So it's been 20 years, but to him, this is really like ticking down the final minutes of this current age before he sends his son back to earth and he begins his rule as King of Kings. We are in the last hour. Just 4 months after that address by Gerald Fleury, America suffered the worst terrorist attack in its history. 19 Islamic terrorists hijacked 4 commercial jetliners. They destroyed the Twin Towers of New York City's World Trade Center. They smashed into the western side of the Pentagon. They were only prevented from hitting a fourth target because of the heroism of passengers aboard yet another jet that crashed in a field in Pennsylvania. 2,977 people were mass murdered that day. 9/11. That history-altering event really underscored that we were, in fact, in the last hour. Now, just a week or so after that incident, President George W. Bush declared the U.S.'s determination to eradicate terrorism, root and branch. He said on September 20th, "Our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them." He had the ambitious goal of eliminating it. He said that this war would continue until it was all pulled up and eliminated. Well, within a month of the 9/11 attacks, October 7th, the U.S. launched a war in Afghanistan. October 7th, 2001. And this war was aimed at driving the Taliban from power. These radical Islamists had given the terrorist group Al-Qaeda safe haven there, and the operation was called Enduring Freedom. But this is what we wrote in the Trumpet magazine at that time, November 2001. The U.S. began its campaign, speaking of that global war on terror that George W. Bush spoke about, began its campaign on the outskirts, zeroing in on Osama bin Laden and the ruling Taliban regime in Afghanistan. The Taliban is at best only a starting point. Far from being the fountainhead of terror in the world, it is a single, shaky, friendless regime that before September 11th was officially recognized by virtually no one. That is what the Taliban was 20 years ago. And the Trumpet made this forecast based on Bible prophecy. While the U.S. wants to eliminate terrorism and is becoming much more aggressive in trying to do so, its efforts will fall short. It frankly does not have the necessary will to tackle the enormity of the problem. So the Trumpet said from the beginning that America would not win this war. That article is called The Head of the Snake. It says the Trumpet has often written that the pride of America's power has been broken, and it referenced Leviticus 26 and verse 19. That is God's doing, this article said, a curse on a nation that has rejected his commandments and abandoned his protection. Now, we started prosecuting this war and made a lot of progress against the Taliban at first, but that did not last for very long. The Taliban reorganized, it struck back, it was waging asymmetric warfare any way that it could find: guerrilla raids, suicide attacks, turncoat killings against American forces. They took advantage of the weaknesses of the Afghan government, and they committed really unspeakable atrocities against the citizens of Afghanistan. And the United States has been dealing with the Taliban regime ever since. And now, 20 years after going into Afghanistan to rout the Taliban, this past weekend, America was chased out of Afghanistan by the Taliban. This is what our editor-in-chief wrote in his trumpet brief on Monday. The Afghanistan catastrophe is an abject, shameful dishonor for America. Our nation has lost 2,448 soldiers and spent $273 million per day, every day, for 20 years on that war, a total of over $2 trillion. Yet our soldiers were evacuated in the darkness of night to leave this nation to barbarians. That prophecy that I just referenced, Leviticus 26 and verse 19, speaks of America's pride in its power being broken. The very next verse warns that your strength shall be spent in vain. And you think about $273 million every single day and more than two soldiers killed every single week for 20 years straight. That is strength spent in vain. Mr. Flory wrote, does anything more graphically illustrate this than America waging an impotent war for two full decades at such high cost and evacuating in such disgrace? Well, what does that mean? It means that we are a cursed nation. Cursed. Those verses are describing curses from God. And nothing illustrates the fact that we are living under those curses like what has just happened. We have witnessed the end of America's superpower moment, this utter humiliation. This is a country whose will has been destroyed and whose strength has been spent truly in vain. On today's program, we have a couple of reports about this historic moment that we have just lived through. We're going to talk about who really benefits from what has happened here. Right from the beginning, the trumpet was pointing to Iran being the head of the terrorist snake. We'll hear a report from trumpet writer Brent Noctegal showing that 20 years later, Iran is still the head and, in fact, more powerful now than it was 20 years ago. Iran is the head of the snake. Obviously, Afghanistan is going to be a big mess in the time ahead. The United States has left behind an air base and all kinds of ammunition and weapons, armored vehicles and so on, equipment that we just abandoned that is now in the hands of the Taliban. And as Gerald Flory said, we're going to leave behind one of the biggest terrorist nations in the world in Afghanistan. But Brent is going to tell us why we cannot take our focus off Iran. We'll also hear a report from trumpet writer Andrew Miller about the Taliban. Just who is this organization that America was unable to overcome after 20 years and that has now announced itself as the new overlords of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan? We know a lot about this group. We've been dealing with them for 20 years. And it is horrifying that they are now back in power and stronger than ever. There's a reason why Afghanis were clinging to the U.S. cargo jets as they were taking off on the runway. They're terrified of Taliban rule. So we'll hear about that in our second segment. In our third segment, we'll move to a different subject. We're going to talk about immunity to COVID-19. We're being told that to have immunity, particularly from this nightmarish Delta variant, we have to get vaccinated. We'll talk to our health correspondent, Jörg Mardian, about whether that's really true and whether the Delta variant is really the super bug that so many media outlets and officials are making it out to be. And at the end of the show, we'll have a last word about why we should take these recent prophetic events as a motivator to fulfill Jesus Christ's command to watch and pray. Let's start by looking at the real terrorist threat America should be concerned about. And it actually isn't the Taliban, as we'll now hear in this report from Brent Noctegal.
Immediately following America's invasion of Afghanistan in 2001, the trumpet boldly forecast that it would result in an unmitigated defeat for the world's lone superpower. Quote, "While the United States wants to eliminate terrorism and is becoming much more aggressive in trying to do so, its efforts will fall short. It frankly does not have the necessary will to tackle the enormity of the problem." End quote. Afghanistan's stunning collapse to the Taliban after America's ill-conceived and shameless retreat has proven that forecast true. There were certainly others over the past two decades that gradually saw the Afghan war as unwinnable, based on the United States' failing strategy. Yet it wasn't America's strategy that informed our forecast, but biblical prophecy. This is why the trumpet was able to declare that this war would be a failure before one American soldier set foot on Afghan soil. America had already won its last war 50 years earlier, and Afghanistan would prove no different. But more than just forecast America's defeat in Afghanistan, that same 2001 trumpet article made another astounding prediction, again, based on biblical prophecy. Quote, "We can see that the terrorist snake will survive America's aggression, head intact and far stronger than ever. Make no mistake about it, Iran is the head of the terrorist snake." End quote. Realize the significance of this statement. Just as the world's lone superpower invaded Afghanistan armed with the most sophisticated weaponry ever used in warfare, we actually forecast that by the end of the failed campaign, not only would the Islamic terrorism survive, but that Iran, the chief sponsor of terrorism, would emerge far stronger than ever. Has that forecast come true as well? Is Iran, the head of the terrorist snake, now stronger than ever? As we witness the shocking defeat of the United States to the Taliban, it's worth considering with a far greater sense of danger the resurgent power of the Islamic State in Iran. This is not to diminish the extreme catastrophe taking place in Afghanistan, nor the horrific conditions that await the Afghani people as Taliban rule snuffs out any hope of personal freedom. Nor, too, does it mean not recognizing the legitimate threat that Afghanistan will once more become a launching pad for terrorist attacks on the West. Make no mistake, Taliban rule in Afghanistan will be horrific for Afghanis, as well as threaten peace elsewhere. But don't let the dramatic footage of towel-headed Taliban fighters wielding AK-47s and driving around American-made Humvees through the streets of Kabul distract away from the far greater threat that Iran currently poses to the world. Lest we forget that the same genocidal ideology that governs the Taliban also reigns supreme in the Islamic Republic of Iran. Yes, the Taliban was shouting death to America yesterday as it took over Kabul. But that same chant is heard after Friday prayers every week in Iran, not to mention voiced inside the Iranian parliament in Tehran. Yes, the Taliban did provide safe haven for Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda as he planned the September 11 terrorist attacks in 2001. But it was also the mullahs in Tehran that worked with al-Qaeda to give safe passage to the terrorists as they crossed through Iran en route to carry out their attacks. Furthermore, for the past 5 years, when it became too dangerous for al-Qaeda inside Afghanistan, all the top brass of the group moved to Iran. Even now, the leadership of al-Qaeda moves freely inside Iran, acting in consort with and under the direction of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Furthermore, while the world wonders what threat al-Qaeda may pose in the future if it's resurgent in Afghanistan, right now, Iran's current actions are setting the Middle East on fire. As Jonathan Speier wrote in the Wall Street Journal on August 16, quote, "The Taliban's seizure of power in Afghanistan, while swift and dramatic, is neither the first nor the sole challenge to the United States and its allies taking place in and around the region. Iran is mounting another, no less significant push," end quote. Speier then details several instances over the past few months where Iran is pushing at the West. He mentions the unprovoked Iranian drone strike on the merchant vessel Mercer Street in the Gulf of Oman, which killed a British crewman and the Romanian captain. He mentions the launching of 20 rockets by Iranian-backed Hezbollah into Israel 2 weeks ago. This was the first time this has happened since the Second Lebanon War 15 years ago. He mentions the 20 strikes by Iranian-backed militias on United States targets inside Iraq. He mentions an underreported Iranian offensive inside Syria, which is bringing its forces closer to attack both Israel and Jordan. Yet hardly any of this current Iranian push is being spoken of by the mainstream press. This is because the chief foreign policy objective of the Biden administration is to reorient the Middle East in favor of the Iranian regime, and the press is on board with that goal. In fact, the wall-to-wall coverage of Afghanistan will no doubt act to shield Iran's continued rise to power from the public, as well as distract from its race to obtain a nuclear weapon. Just 2 weeks ago, Israeli Defense Minister Benny Gantz declared that Iran is only 10 weeks away from obtaining the bomb. In fact, it's possible that the overwhelming coverage of Afghanistan right now could lead many to mistakenly look at Iran as a moderate nation. It's not a stretch to imagine a scenario in the very near future where the Biden administration looks to partner with Iran at holding back the Taliban in Afghanistan. Taking it one step further, is it possible that the Biden administration announced it was leaving Afghanistan without any preconditions, knowing full well the Taliban would take over immediately and thus provide added incentive to work together with the Iranians? Now, if this sounds familiar, it's because the same thing happened inside Iraq at the end of the Obama administration. Consider this. In 2011, Barack Obama demanded that American forces leave Iraq against the advice of all the top military commanders. This led to the terrorist resurgence in the form of the Islamic State. The sadistic barbarism of the Islamic State shocked the world, which then justified the use of Iranian-backed Shiite militias in Iraq to fight alongside the United States to defeat the Islamic State. At the time, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Flurry called the Islamic State a distraction from the real danger in the Middle East, Iran. In an article entitled America's Greatest Defeat, Iran's Victory, Mr. Flurry then went on to explain how the United States was lured into fighting alongside Iran, which only empowered Iran to take over Iraq after the fall of the Islamic State. Now, while it is unlikely that Iran desires to take over Afghanistan as it has Iraq, it's still highly likely that the Taliban takeover will act as a distraction, diverting attention away from Iran's drive to control the Middle East. The fact is that right now, Iran poses a more imminent and more powerful threat to the world than the Taliban could ever muster. Instead of opining on the threat Taliban rule might pose for the world in future years to come, Iran's current push for control of the Middle East and its quest for obtaining nuclear weapons to fulfill its radical genocidal ambitions demand that we cannot take our eyes off Iran. More importantly, Bible prophecy demands that our attention must stay with Iran as well. This is what Mr. Flurry wrote about the Islamic State, but it could be applied right now to what's happening in Afghanistan. Quote, "The shocking barbarity of the Islamic State consumed a lot of the world's attention the past few years. In one sense, that was understandable. But if people had viewed those events in the context of Bible prophecy, they could have seen that there was an even bigger danger that was being overlooked." End quote. And that danger, of course, is the rise of Iran. The Islamic State was a distraction 5 years ago. Will the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan be the distraction today? To consider this question, as well as the biblical prophecies that underpin our forecasts related to Iran, I suggest that you read Mr. Flurry's article from 2018 entitled America's Greatest Defeat, Iran's Victory. As we wrote at the outset of the Afghan War, the Iranian head of the terrorist snake would emerge from America's invasion intact and far stronger. In the aftermath of America's withdrawal from Afghanistan, don't be distracted from the real danger in the Middle East. Continue to watch as Iran grows far stronger, for it is Iran's pushy foreign policy, not the Taliban's, that the Bible prophesies will be the catalyst for the major end-time events. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Brent. In September 20th, 2001, George W. Bush said our enemy is a radical network of terrorists and every government that supports them. He said our war on terror begins with Al-Qaeda, but it does not end there. It will not end until every terrorist group of global reach has been found, stopped, and defeated. These are really strong words that, you know, some good applause lines in that speech that he gave just a week or so after the 9/11 attacks. The trumpet made the case right from the very beginning, as you brought out in that report. Iran was the head of the terrorist snake. Iran has actually been shown since then to have played an instrumental role in harboring the terrorists that carried out 9/11. He focused on Afghanistan. It was a much less formidable foe. It's remarkable how much treasure that we've sunk into this prosecuting this war in Afghanistan. Iran has pretty much gotten a pass, but George W. Bush, he was talking about the links between the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. They were providing safe harbor. Iran provides safe harbor for Al-Qaeda to this day.
Yeah, that's what happened after the American invasion and occupation in many ways of Afghanistan was effective to a certain point. It did really target Al-Qaeda quite strongly, and it really did force Al-Qaeda to move base. And it did this back in 2015. This is something that Secretary of State Mike Pompeo brought out just a couple of months before the Trump administration left office. He said back in 2015, the number two of Al-Qaeda, and then the leader of Al-Qaeda, and basically all the high-ranking officials to this day operate outside, inside of Iran, and even command and control for Al-Qaeda's actions around the world is given an okay by the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. And this is very much contrary to the narrative that you hear even to this day. You have Al-Qaeda, the head of Sunni version of Islam, their terrorist outfit. And then you have Iran, the Shia version of Islam, that have their own terrorist actions and their own ambition. And it's little has been spoken about how they work together at times. And right now, if you're going to talk about where, you know, everyone's wondering, there's many articles, oh no, this is going to be dangerous for America because Al-Qaeda could be given safe passage back there, or they could thrive in Afghanistan. And that is true. But what's forgotten is they're already thriving right now underneath the leadership of Iran. And so, again, we can go back to what Mr. Flurry said, even Mr. Bush. And it seems like the ambition was right to try and stamp it out everywhere, but he chose the easy target.
Right.
Everybody around the world felt like the Taliban and Al-Qaeda deserved to go. It was the one that didn't take as much courage. Yes, they were behind the terrorist attacks, at least directly. Iran did have a part in September 11th. But Mr. Flurry talked about if you wanted to conquer it, you have to go to its source. And then you have to find the state sponsors, the national governments that are funding global terrorism and terrorism with an Islamic bent. And all those roads lead back to Iran. And that has been made clear ever since, you know, Al-Qaeda. We haven't heard much of Al-Qaeda, let's say, in the past 5-6 years. And we hear about Iranian actions, but they're a state, so people don't really refer to them, a lot of their actions, as terrorist actions, unless it's Hezbollah or somebody like that. However, if you look what they're doing in the Middle East, everyone's afraid of Iran, and it's not because of their military inside their borders. It's because what the jihad that they are exporting to try and take over the other territories in the Middle East. That's terrorism.
So the fact that the United States focused its attention on Afghanistan, the Taliban specifically, back in 2001, really out of a hesitation to want to go directly at Iran from the beginning, we've come a long way in 20 years in some ways. We've spent a lot of money. We've lost a lot of lives. There have been a lot of terrorist attacks since then. The amazing thing is you've got the Taliban back, stronger than it was before, and Iran is far stronger than it was even 20 years ago.
Yeah, it's far stronger than it was. And it's also, I think, and the reason that it's been allowed to be stronger is because you have an American administration that has given Iran a pass and even really helped Iran, going back to the Obama administration, helped Iran along, really normalizing its relationship with the world, trying to make it sound like a moderate, rational power, really putting to the side the religion that does underlie their decisions and their desires internationally to take over territory and push out the Islamic world as they would see it, or at least create Islamic world all over the world. And so, yeah, they have grown. And that's what Mr. Flurry said, that, you know, all terrorist movements flows from Iran fundamentally. That's what he wrote back in 2002 in his article, Why We Cannot Win the War in Terrorism. A war against terrorism, a really amazing article, because it was about, I guess, 5 or 6 months into the Afghanistan war. The Afghan war was going pretty successfully, mm-hmm. and Mr. Flurry already saw at that point, well, that's only going to take you so far. You must attack it at the source, the state-sponsored source, and that comes from Iran.
That is very true. It's remarkable to go back and look at some of those early articles and just how on the head of the nail our editor-in-chief was, and what the Trumpet was writing at that time, and how it's just unfolded exactly the way that we anticipated it would based on the prophecies of the Bible. We've been talking with the Trumpet's Jerusalem correspondent and the host of the Watch Jerusalem podcast, Brent Noctegal, about why, even with the Taliban taking over Afghanistan, we need to keep our eyes on Iran. He's working on an article on this subject. It'll be up on thetrumpet.com soon. In the meantime, check out our booklet, The King of the South, explaining the Bible prophecy about Iran and why we're focused on Iran so much. And we'll also put a link to that article by our editor-in-chief, Why We Cannot Win the War Against Terrorism, in the show notes for today's program. Thanks so much for your time, Brent.
No problem.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
America's rapid evacuation from Afghanistan and the nation's swift takeover by the Taliban has a lot of people there terrified. And there's good reason for that, as we will now learn in this report from Andrew Millard.
The Taliban are back in power. Almost two decades after the United States military drove these Islamic militants from Kabul, the Taliban have invaded the city and filled the vacuum left by U.S. forces. Now the Afghani people are mentally preparing themselves for the return of the brutal regime that ruled their country from 1996 to 2001. One female Afghan reporter even broke down in the Pentagon briefing room on August 16th. Lamenting the U.S. withdrawal from her home country and explaining what the consequences would be for girls and women.
I'm from Afghanistan. As you know, I'm from Afghanistan, and I'm very upset today. Because Afghan women didn't expect that overnight all the Taliban came. They took off my flag. This is my flag. And they put their flag. Everybody is upset, especially women. And I forgot my question to me. What do you ask? Where is my president, former President Ghani? People expected that he bye-bye with the people. And immediately he ran away. We don't know where is he. And we don't have a president. President Biden said that President Ghani, no. He has to fight for us people. They have to do everything, and we were able to financially help them. But we don't have any president. We don't have anything. Afghan people, they don't know what to do. Women has a lot of achievement in Afghanistan. I had a lot of achievement. I left from the Taliban like 20 years ago. Now we go back to the first step again. Do you have any comment? Where is our president, Ghani? He should answer to Afghan people.
Also known as the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, the Taliban is a sect of Sunni Islam that practices Sharia law. During their rule from 1996 to 2001, the Taliban burned vast swaths of fertile land and denied UN food supplies to 160,000 Afghans in an attempt to starve people into conversion. They banned painting, they banned photography, they banned movies that depicted people or living things, they banned music made with instruments other than a frame drum, they banned women from going to school or even working jobs outside the medical sector, and they only made that last concession since male medical personnel are not allowed to examine female patients. They required that women be accompanied by a male relative or wear a burqa at all times when in public, and they publicly whipped and executed anyone who disobeyed their rules. The worst ethnic massacre committed by the Taliban happened in the summer of 1998, when Taliban forces swept north from Herat to the predominantly Hazara and Uzbek city of Mazar-e-Sharif. Taliban soldiers drove pickup trucks up and down the streets of the city, shooting everything that moved, shooting shop owners, shooting cart pullers, shooting women and children shoppers, even shooting goats and donkeys. More than 8,000 civilians were slaughtered that day and left to rot in the summer heat because they were suspected of converting from Sunni Islam to Shiite Islam. The commander of the attack, in his declaration from the central mosque, said, "The Hazaras are not Muslim, and now we have to kill them. You either accept to be Muslim or you leave Afghanistan. Wherever you go, we will catch you. If you go up, we will pull you down by your feet. If you hide below, we will pull you up by your hair." The Taliban is also infamous for handing tribal elders and imams orders to bring them lists of unmarried women aged between 15 and 45 for their soldiers to marry. Yet girls as young as 12 have also been forced into sexual slavery. This practice is used as a tool of ethnic cleansing, forcibly assimilating cultures into the Taliban's dominant Pashtun group. Now that the U.S. military has withdrawn, Taliban fighters have revived this vile practice on a large scale, going door to door abducting teenage girls. The general director of the Afghan Film Association recently wrote a lengthy memorandum saying, "I write to you with a broken heart and a deep hope that you can join me in protecting my beautiful people, especially filmmakers, from the Taliban. In the last few weeks, the Taliban has massacred our people, they have kidnapped our children, they have sold girls as child brides to their men. It's a humanitarian crisis, yet the world is silent. They will ban all art. I and other filmmakers could be next on their hit list." Since there are still between 5,000 and 10,000 Americans in Afghanistan, some analysts are warning that a resurgent Taliban could turn Afghanistan into a central nerve center for planning 9/11-style terrorist attacks. So as radical Islam spreads throughout Southwest Asia, a lot more people are going to suffer under brutal regimes like the Taliban. Jesus Christ told his disciples about the time when the world would be dominated by non-Israelite nations. In Matthew 24, he said, "And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately, saying, 'Tell us, what shall these things be, and what shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the world?'" Jesus did not correct his disciples and tell them that the world as we know it was never going to end. Instead, he answered their question, detailing specific events that would occur when the present civilization comes crashing down. Christ said that Jerusalem would fall by the edge of the sword and should be led away captive by all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down by the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So what is this time of the Gentiles, and who are the Gentiles? Most people think that all non-Jews are Gentiles, but the Jews are just one of the 12 tribes of Israel. There are 11 other tribes that are Israelite and not Gentiles. The first book of the Bible lists the tribes of Israel and prophesies of their fate in the last days. Genesis said that the descendants of Joseph's sons Manasseh would become a great nation, and the descendant of Joseph's son Ephraim would become a multitude of nations. This prophecy is one of the many proofs that America is the United States, the strongest nation in the world history, and Britain is Ephraim, which governed a vast commonwealth of nations. Jesus Christ said that the time of the Gentiles would be a sign of the end. This means that there had to be what you might call a time of the Israelites prior to that. This is the period that historians call the Pax Britannica and the Pax Americana. Jesus said that the rise of Gentile nations would be a sign of the end of the world and of his coming. these Gentile nations will humiliate America like the Taliban just did, and for a brief time will rule their people with terrifying brute force like the Taliban is doing now.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
If you judged the United States' current COVID-19 situation just by reading the headlines, you'd think we have a completely out-of-control pandemic. The media, the experts, the politicians, they're hyperventilating about the scariest, most dangerous variant ever, the Delta variant. But our next guest says it's not the Delta variant that's our biggest concern. We're talking via Skype from British Columbia with personal trainer and holistic nutritionist Jorg Mardian. Hello, Jorg.
Hello there.
So officials tell us that the immunity that we get from the vaccines is more powerful than that from our own immune system. Is that true?
So there's a little backstory to natural immunity and why natural immunity is getting kicked to the curb. And politicians do want to make vaccine immunity the case of the day, but it really stems down from what's going on right now. And the vaccine business is very good with COVID. Collectively, the big three pharmaceutical makers have hit about $75 billion in profits.
Not too shabby.
I mean, that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, that has never happened, that they're making so much so quick.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I think the way that this is all being presented to the public, science really has this veneer of unimpeachability, that it's absolutely motivated purely for completely altruistic reasons. There couldn't possibly be the taint of political or economic motive behind what they're doing. But the numbers that you're talking about they're almost impossibly huge, impossible in the sense of them not having an impact on the decisions that are being made.
Well, that's correct. I mean, the numbers are staggering, and the big pharmaceutical companies then use that cash. That cash buys influence. And we know that. They love to lobby lawmakers who regulate our healthcare. So in 2020, the world's biggest drug makers and their trade groups, they cut checks to about 356 lawmakers. And that's more than two-thirds of sitting members of Congress. So I think that totaled about $11 million in campaign giving. So now they call it building relationships. We can call it buying favors. We can go back and forth on that. But one hand washes the other, and you know, you give some campaign money, and in turn, they're getting back billions of taxpayer money to fund vaccine research.
Okay, so you're talking about there's a lot of money involved, and it's going from pharmaceutical companies to the politicians who are making these decisions. It's easy to follow that money that could illustrate a possible or probable, I guess, corrupt motive for them advocating vaccines over natural immunity. If you just look at the science itself, can you make a case for the fact that natural immunity is actually superior to the immunity that you get from the vaccines?
Well, it is. I mean, for one thing, natural immunity doesn't make any money. So the CDC, the World Health Organization, and whoever else is financially beholden to these pharmaceutical companies, they're going to deny it, you know. And then that's why we're hearing right now virtually all patients that are hospitalized and dying of COVID are unvaccinated. So that's the story behind it. In essence, natural immunity doesn't exist. And conversely, Pfizer and Moderna, they even claim that their vaccines are 95% effective, right? So natural immunity is bad. The vaccines are good. That's the story we're hearing. And that's why we're hearing this phrase, the pandemic of the unvaccinated. But there is a problem, and we're starting to see that now open right up. And it's called breakthrough cases. So those are the vaccinated people that are getting sick. So CNN said that it's like 1% of cases, which is a huge lie. If you look at Israel, which is kind of the epicenter of vaccination, they were first with the mass vaccination campaigns. Their national news report just on August 13th showed that 54% of fully vaccinated people had COVID out of those over 6,000 cases.
That's a lot more than 1%.
That's a lot more. Now, in the U.S., they admit to 9,000 cases nationally, but you know, the CDC admits that that's probably an undercount because they don't report cases requiring hospitalization. Hmm. And that to me is highly suspicious because if you look at vaccination COVID cases, they count all those with the unvaccinated. So it seems that there's a scare tactic to fit the numbers to fit the narrative. But if we're looking at the good news and, you know, the proof behind it is that one in three Americans have already battled COVID. Mm-hmm. We know that. There's millions, and there's about a 99.4% survival rate. That's our proof. They didn't get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And they have robust protective antibodies in their body. And the studies show that these could last months or even a lifetime. There's many studies pointing to that, but these studies are all being suppressed through the mainstream media. In the bigger picture, if you look at millions and millions of cases where people survive over 90%, I mean, it shows you that there's a natural immunity that anecdotally at least seems superior to vaccine immunity when the vaccine immunity gives you all kinds of side effects and breakthrough cases.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we've talked about some of the side effects from some of those vaccines, which in some cases have been far worse than the effects of COVID itself. So now there is this talk now about the Delta variant, and the narrative is, well, they're saying that if you get the vaccine, then you're less susceptible to get the severe effects of COVID, and they're talking about the Delta variant as being something that your body, even if you had it before, you're not going to be immune from the Delta variant. There's a lot of very inflammatory or incendiary language about this Delta variant. What is your thought on how concerning this is relative to everything else that you've been talking about with these low hospitalization or death rates from COVID?
Right. So we do have to look at it from the angle of breakthrough cases. You know, if the government has nothing to hide and they don't want to create confusion, at least, you know, tell us why you're not counting all the cases. What are you keeping in the dark? You know, breakthrough cases prove that the vaccines are not as effective as you're saying. There was an article in The Blaze that showed that this Delta variant has a 0.1% case fatality rate. That's so, not very high.
So is that lower or higher than the original COVID-19?
That seems to me even lower. And that makes sense because each variant is less virulent. I mean, it's more contagious, but it's less deadly. So we know each variant that comes out is less deadly. Now, if you look at what this variant does, it doesn't inspire fear. Let's look at the top symptoms. Suspiciously like the flu, headaches, sore throat, runny nose, fever. I mean, those are hardly mass killers in their own right. You know, but what are we hearing? Well, there's massive amount of people going to the hospital. There are a lot of people that have weak immune systems, and that's another story in itself, just with how sick people are as a nation. Mm-hmm. There's a site that's called statnews.com. I really like it because it gives real-time statistics. So when I looked yesterday, it showed that there's 564 deaths, COVID deaths, in one day. So that brings it down to about 0.004% mortality. And, you know, it's averaging. It's going 200, 300, 500, 600, 400. It just keeps going up and down. So the Delta variant it has those 564 deaths among 151,000 or so cases. All right. So that's what we're hearing. But back in June, when there was just about the same number of people who died that day, there were 17,000 or so cases. So, yes, this variant is more transmissible, mm-hmm. but it's less deadly. You know, and you also have to look at this matter in context. And that's what the news media isn't giving us. The current population of the states is over 331 million. And I think it's outrageous to say that 500 or so deaths a day are the greatest threat the U.S. faces right now, according mm-hmm. to Joe Biden.
Right.
You know, I mean, we are seeing a recent uptick of a sort, but that's down sharply, sharply from the over 3,000 deaths earlier this year a day. You know, so that's the context. And I just want to say, too, I'm from Canada, and this is an embarrassing situation down here. We've got 38 million people here. And we're scared witless of 4,500 COVID cases, mm-hmm. six deaths.
Well, I think in New Zealand, they just had one case of the Delta variant and they locked the entire country down just this week.
It's pure fiction. It's predicting a catastrophe in the midst of statistically insignificant amount of deaths. And you're just creating this narrative of fear. If you look at the states and you look at the top six ways that people die, cardiovascular disease, cancer, accident injuries, Alzheimer's, diabetes, that's around 5,000 deaths a day. Mm. Okay, that's just context. If you look at the COVID vaccines and the side effects from those, I mean, the VAERS database right now has almost 13,000 vaccine-related deaths. That doesn't scratch the surface because we're told, according to whistleblowers, it could be 45 or 50,000. So if you're looking at all of those together, those are what I call, most of those are preventable deaths from just a few sources, over 5,000 a mm-hmm. day.
Yeah.
No one's outraged. No one's panicking. No one's locking down from that. And if you compare that to the Delta virus, you know, if people are getting mad, maybe it should be because we're looking in the wrong direction.
Yeah, well, I suppose they would argue that the difference is just the fact that it's communicable versus non-communicable diseases. But when you look at the cost of all the measures that we've put in place to prevent the transmission of this this disease, from the lockdowns, the face masks, the shutting of businesses, the and now the tremendous vaccine program that we're trying to get jabs in people's arms all over the country, vaccine mandates and so on. They've completely stripped people of privacy, of their freedoms, and increased the power of the government tremendously to prevent this from spreading. Very, very high cost.
That's right. And we have to look back to as to why this is a problem. This virus here, which and no other viruses previously have been a problem.
Yep, right.
We have to look at $75 billion
right.
in profit.
Yeah. Well, we definitely appreciate you looking into all of the details and the statistics for us and making sense of what really is a very senseless situation that is spreading across our countries a lot faster than the virus is. We've been talking with our health correspondent, Jörg Mardian, about vaccines and the Delta variant. He's working on an article about this subject. You can find that soon at thetrumpet.com. Thank you for your time, Jörg.
Thank you.
It's time for today's last word.
Can you discern the signs of the times we live in? Jesus Christ said we should be able to. He said, "Behold the fig tree and all the trees, when they now shoot forth, you see and know of your own selves that summer is now near at hand. So likewise you, when you shall see these things come to pass, know you that the kingdom of God is near at hand." That's recorded in Luke 21, verses 29 through 31. He was saying, you know summer is near just by looking at what's happening to the foliage on the trees. Likewise, you should be able to tell that the end of this age is near and that Christ's return is near by watching for these specific signs that he has given as they are fulfilled step by step. Christ is telling us we have to be on the lookout. Now, when you look at what has happened in recent days in Afghanistan, you are seeing prophecy fulfilled. You're seeing a towering sign of America's downfall. They're sobering events, certainly, but they also point to something awesome, a sign that Jesus Christ is coming soon. And Christ told us how this should affect our lives. That passage in Luke 21 continues, verses 34 to 35 say, "And take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your heart should be overcharged with carousing and drunkenness and cares of this life, and so that day come upon you unawares. For as a snare shall it come on all them that dwell on the face of the whole earth." The prophecies of what is going to happen in this world right at the end, right before Jesus Christ returns, are horrific. And Christ says those events are going to catch a lot of people off guard, but they won't catch you off guard if you're paying attention, if you watch for these signs, and you also refrain from, as he warned, getting caught up in the cares of this life and worldliness, carousing and drunkenness and so on. You have to be spiritually vigilant. And Christ concludes in verse 36, "Watch you therefore and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man." That is a direct command. We have to watch and pray always. And he says there, if you do that, God says you can be accounted worthy to escape these horrors that are about to befall this world. As American planes were leaving Afghanistan, you had Afghanis on the runway who are so terrified of what they're leaving behind that they were trying to cling to the sides of the jets as they took off. The planes themselves were absolutely crammed with people, far more than they were built to hold. But they couldn't fit everybody, and there were people actually clinging to the sides of the jets, and people who fell to their deaths because they couldn't hold on to those planes as they rose up into the air. Now, it's very different circumstances, but it's reminiscent of that moment in history when you had torrential rains falling in Noah's flood and the fountains of the earth opened up and you had people clinging to the sides of the ark and trying to scramble to safety. And we need to realize Bible prophecy says the crisis in Afghanistan is just a tiny picture of the crises that are going to swallow this world. And those people who are so desperate to escape, that really is a picture of what is going to be happening more and more in this world. This world is going down, and you're going to have more and more people trying to escape, looking for some way of escape to safety. Well, God does offer protection. He does offer protection, and his work is not something that is going down. It is rising. God is actually preparing a people to solve the world's problems and to replace the world's corrupt governments. And you look at what is happening in this world, and you see a bright contrast with what God is accomplishing with his people as he teaches us the way of give, the way of love, the way of peace. 1 John 2 and verse 18 is the verse that says, "Little children, it is the last hour." And it explains the events in the church of God that prove that we're in that time of urgency right before Christ's return. Now, the verses that immediately precede that has the Apostle John saying this, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him." the love of the Father. That's what God wants to build in people, the very love of God, the way of give. That is the opposite, absolutely the opposite of the ways of this world. You can't love the world and have the love of God in you. Verse 16 says, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world." And then notice verse 17, "And the world passes away and the lust thereof, but he that does the will of God abides forever." You know, America has been the most blessed nation in the history of the world. And now this nation is being cursed, grievously cursed. This nation is passing away. Mr. Fleury wrote in his trumpet brief on Monday, "America is not just declining, it is dying. Other powers around the world see this clearly. They are taking advantage of this and preparing to replace American dominance with their own dominance. America is being destroyed before our eyes. Many are now in a state of open despair." But this verse in John says, "He that does the will of God abides forever." What a promise. Are you going the way of this world, which is passing away? Or are you striving to do the will of God? Take a good hard look at what is happening in this world and use that as motivation to devote yourself to God and doing the will of God and supporting the work of God. God's work is a plane taking off, not in a shameful evacuation, but taking off into a glorious royal future that abides forever. And you don't need to cling to the wheel. You are being offered a ticket on board that plane. What a magnificent opportunity. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on the program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests, Brent Noctegal, Andrew Miller, and Jorg Mardian. Thanks to Nick Irwin and Dwight Falk for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Peter Hitchens. A nation is the sum of its memories, and when those memories are allowed to die, it is less of a nation. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.